Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica, Mitch Albom, and Bob Ryan.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mike Lupica, MLB.com and the New York Daily News.
I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and we welcome you to this edition of the Sports Reporters podcast on this Monday after blissfully a week of actual sports activity, capped off by what is now becoming the new Game of Thrones, the mandatory watching on Sunday nights, the latest in the Michael Jordan Last Dance documentary, and we'll deal with all that stuff. But guys, let's begin with the draft itself, which went chalk for the first seven or eight picks anyhow, and then got interesting with some of the quarterback selections later on. And let's start with the most important position, not only in football, but arguably in all of sports, which is the quarterback. Joe Burrow's a Cincinnati Bengal, and no big surprise. Tua is now going to play for the Miami Dolphins. Justin Herbert for the L.A. Chargers. Aaron Rodgers now apparently has his successor, although he was hoping for someone he could throw to besides on the sidelines. And Jalen Hurts has ended up a Philadelphia Eagle, and nobody is playing quarterback new for the New England Patriots. So of all those moves, which did you find the most intriguing with the quarterback position?
The Patriots. I thought they would take a quarterback. And either the kingmaker has decided that Jarrett Stidham is the answer, because I can't believe he thinks Brian Hoyer is. I thought of all the teams in that draft, and we'll talk about how much fun it was to watch it, okay? The one that was most bizarre was Belichick and Belichick's dog. And I really, Bob, I don't know what the fallout has been in Boston, but what the hell?
Well, it's always interesting when, you know, you see some sign of humanity in Belichick. Usually the only place you ever see it is when he goes to a Celtic playoff game and beams when they put his face up there on the big board, and you know, it's the Sally Field, oh, you love me thing. Anyway, it hasn't been a huge thing about the dog and all. People.
No. That's not what I'm talking about.
You mean the
about.
Quarterback? The quarterback thing?
They didn't get it. No, they didn't get anybody good.
They didn't. Well, we don't know that.
Well, tell us about the first pick, Bob.
Let's stick with the quarterback thing. And there's two issues here. One, I agree with you, the quarterback thing. And people were anticipating that somewhere. Now, they did go in the undrafted free agent realm of quarterbacks, but not in the draft itself. Yes, they did not take a quarterback. And he was asked about it, of course, and endorsed Jarrett Stidham. And he proved a lot last year, Mike. We just didn't see it, of course, because, you know, this was practice. He threw four passes. One was a pick six all year. And, of course, we all know what Brian Hoyer is, and he hasn't won a game since 2016, and he's been with 10 teams, including the Patriots, and you know what you're getting there. You're getting a backup quarterback, and you know. All right. So, yes, he didn't take a quarterback. It's not over yet. Cam Newton's and Nelson is still Newton is still hanging out there. Andy Dalton is still hanging out there. I wouldn't be struck dumb if that were the blockbuster move down the road.
Would you rather have, Bobby?
Oh, I want Newton.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yeah. And really? I'm so glad they did. Let Winston, I don't care what James
Can Winston they afford
does.
Him, Bob?
Oh, of course not. No, they have to do so. No, I'm saying this is all abstract. Now you're going to get technical. We're going to have to and be practical of can they afford them.
No, Bob, when you go to the car dealership, okay, and you say, Bob, let me just take you through this, okay? You need a new car.
No, what they would do.
You go there and you say, oh, I'd like that one. And then they tell you the price and you can't afford it. So, Bob, it doesn't matter
they would
if you
trade,
like that one.
They would trade Joe Tooney. Who they just that would be the idea. That would be the most logical thing that they could do to free up some money to pay anybody, whether it's Cam Newton or Isaac Newton, is that they could trade Joe Tooney, and that still may happen. So that's that. All right, so the quarterback thing, yes, he appears to be endorsing Jarrett Stidham.
Well, good luck to him in turning him into the next Tom Brady. And you know, there's a point at which it's not the coach; it is the player. And Brian Hoyer's been there before. And we all know Brian Hoyer's ceiling has been reached. Nice guy, played at Michigan State. But he's not turning into something that he hasn't been already in his career.
Of course not.
And if Stidham has got something, you know, that everybody in the world isn't seeing, but Belichick is, then
all right,
we'll
Mitch, let me ask you
genius.
About Stidham, okay? Because we have spent a lot of this last, what, however many months, talking about Jimmy Garoppolo. Do you think the Kingmaker has convinced himself that he has found another Garoppolo in the weeds, except we found out that maybe we needed to pump the brakes on Jimmy Garoppolo on that trip to Canton?
Yeah. You know, Mike, it's a good question. I don't know what body of work he's working off of in that, you know, how much has the guy played?
Right.
I mean,
right.
There's no, at some point you got to play in an NFL game. I don't care how great you look in practice or training camp or on film or anywhere else. You know, Garoppolo had played some before they traded him. And, you know, they saw what they had. But I don't know anything about him other than his name, and it's mystifying to me. But, all right, there were many, many other quarterbacks that were interesting. First of all, once again, I can tell you here in Detroit, once again, they're pulling their hair out because the Detroit Lions were just in the worst possible position, even after having a lousy year. They fooled nobody. And what's going on here now is, like, why couldn't they – you know, play their cards close to the vest, pull off a Kevin Costner draft day kind of thing, and get somebody to trade with them so that they wouldn't have to use a number three pick on a cornerback. As good as Jeff Okuda is, he's the highest picked corner, and I keep saying corner because it sounds like quarter, highest picked cornerback in 23 years. And of course, the Lions have to do it. And they didn't want to use that pick on him. They wanted to trade back, and all the Miami Dolphins and LA Chargers did was say, nah, you know, you're the Lions. You're not going to pull off any funny business. You're not going to take Tua and force us to trade him. We'll just sit here. And that's exactly what happened. So they ended up wasting a number three pick, in my opinion, on a cornerback. Not that he's not a good player. He's a very good, excellent player. But you could have gotten him at seven. And instead, they use him at three. The Jets do what they do. And then Miami, just without having to make a trade or move up or do anything, gets their quarterback for the future in Tua. And then L.A. comes right in and takes Justin Herbert afterwards. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see of these three guys, and every quarterback year has this, who becomes a star faster. Now, Joe Burrow is a great player going to a really bad team. Tua is a great player who we don't know if he's ready to play yet. And Justin Herbert goes to a team that, you know, is kind of mystifying. I mean, last year, before you know it played out, everybody thought that the Chargers were going to be a good team. So sometimes the lower picked quarterbacks end up performing better. Which of those three do you think is going to emerge as a winner the fastest?
You know what I really think? Because, as you say, the Bengals are just god-awful, okay? I really like Justin Herbert. I didn't sell off on Justin Herbert because he did not have the senior year that everybody expected. And really, if he had finished a little better, you know, if they'd won the Arizona State game, I mean, we're looking, you know, who knows how his year would have finished. I'm not saying they were going to win the national championship. There's so much to like about this guy. And you know what I can't get out of my mind? I think the Chargers might not be horrible next year. Okay, that's one thing. I think there's some talent there. But the thing I can't get out of my mind about Justin Herbert is the way, even though he wasn't having a great day throwing the ball, he put his team on his back, Mitch and Bob, to win that Rose Bowl. And he did it running the ball. And you know what? Quarterbacks can run the ball now in the National Football League. I really like Justin Herbert.
He fills the, you know, the chart look, you know, he looks like the modern quarterback. That's true. No, I like him. You know, I'm going to be just interjecting, you know, back on the Belichick thing. Okay, the first guy of the quality quarterback he would have had a shot at is Hurts, because the other four were off the board. He was if Love went at 26, and he's already traded back to 32. Anyway, so it's Hurts or Frome, right? It's either one of those two that he would have had a shot at. Yeah. So how excited Hurts would have, you know, I would have liked to have gone for Hurts myself.
You think if Jordan Love was available, he would have taken him?
I don't know. Who knows? He's not going to tell us, you know.
Well, Jordan Love is when I was watching his highlight film, because admittedly, I haven't watched a ton of him. You know, I know who he is and I know what they were saying about him, as you do with every draft pick, but I didn't watch a lot of him in college. But you look at that highlight film and you see a lot of raw talent. There's a lot of raw talent. You know, he's got that ability to move around and pinpoint that ball and throw
and
off the
so
run.
And happy to have him, Mitch. You can tell.
Yeah. Well, but that isn't that an interesting thing? I mean, and this was a theme, guys. This was a theme on a number of teams, and it's very interesting to see how it'll play out. They drafted on their strength. You saw teams who had great running games pick running backs. You saw teams like San Francisco had a great defensive line add to their defensive line. And you see the Green Bay Packers, who have arguably the second or third best quarterback in football right now, draft a quarterback.
And guess who they took next, Mitch? They took our kid from Boston College, A.J. Dillon, who's you know, he's just great. And they played to another strength, because you could make the case that their running back was their best player last
I know.
Year.
It's weird. It's weird. Let's talk about Love and Jordan and Rodgers for a second. Do you think that creates friction? I mean, Green Bay just finally got past the quarterback's not getting along with the coach situation, you know, by bringing in the new coach. And then there was the little period where they had to get used to one another. And then they started to click and they looked like a chugging machine towards the end of the year. And then, you know, they got knocked out. What do you think this is going to do for Aaron Rodgers' relationship with the Green Bay Packers?
Well, there's two things involved here. One is who they drafted a quarterback, which is certainly what we're going to talk about, and B, it's what they didn't do, which is get him a wide receiver in a wide receiver laden draft. And I think so. He's got two reasons to be pissed off. You know, and
well,
he will be pissed
in their,
off.
In their
he
whole
will.
Draft,
he will
in
take
whole,
this very personally. Don't
in their
you think?
Whole draft, they took a tight end with their third pick. That's it. In terms of anybody who's going to help him out. Well, they were running back, like you said, Mike, A.J. Dillon. But, I mean, they got a guy to hand the ball off to. They need people to throw the ball to. I don't know. You know, that I think that's going to be a weird relationship. You know, Aaron Rodgers is not the fuzzy mentor. you know, Aaron Rodgers is competitive. I don't know that he's going to say, yeah, kid, come on over. We'll start going over the playbook right now so you can replace me.
No, all right, no, I'm trying to think. I'm trying to picture the second round, guys, okay? If they had taken a wide receiver, the Packers, who the quarterbacks that would have been available are Hurts and Fromm and anybody else?
No, I think that's the you know, the more marquee, if you will, list of available then. That's what it was. Hurts and Fromm.
Jacob Eason was the next guy to go after all of them. Oh, Burrow, Jacob Herbert, Eason. Tua, Jordan Love. Jake
Forgot
Fromm was the fifth quarterback taken. Hurts was the sixth quarterback taken. Not you know, Fromm.
Eason's the son of former Patriots Super Bowl quarterback, Tony Eason.
Wow. Yeah. By the way, when you're talking earlier, Mitch, about the drafting to strength thing, and there have been three incarnations of the Patriots in this 20 years, and in the first two, for sure, that's what Belichick would do. He didn't draft for need. He drafted best player on the board thing. That was definitely his thinking. Uh-huh. He didn't draft for a need until he finally drafted a linebacker. I guess it was Mayo when he finally drafted for need. But then, so that's a definite theory. There's two schools of thought, you know, that anybody can adopt. You go for the best player, and even if you already have an all pro at that position, or you go for need, and it's not the higher ranked player. So that's what you do.
Well, I'm sorry, you need a quarterback. Okay, I don't know how else to say it. If anybody has learned that, it ought to be Bill Belichick. He's been the beneficiary of the great quarterback for 15, 20 years. So. I don't buy the, you know, let's suddenly become a defensive team and we'll win that way with a mediocre quarterback who just game manages. That game is over.
So, Mitch, do you think they're going to go for Newton or Dalton?
I can't imagine that they're going to start the season and plan on playing with Jarrett Stidham as their quarterback and plan on being in the playoffs. you know, I don't think they're in a, they're not a process team. They're not let's tank and get a number one pick next year. They're a win now team, and Belichick's going to want to do it. And I, but can you see Cam Newton? I mean, talk about a mercurial guy working with Bill Belichick. I mean, the way that
McDaniel.
I've seen this happen before with the Patriots. They brought in guys from Randy Moss on up, you know, and Antonio Brown, because they feel, well, we've got the Patriot thing going here, and we can turn guys who other teams have trouble with into our kind of player. But that's when Brady was the quarterback of the team, and they had a double-fisted thing. They had the coach, and they had Brady to keep you in line. You don't have Brady, and the most important position on your team is going to be the mercurial position. And it's going to be it's not a wide receiver now. It's not a defensive back. It's the quarterback. Everything's going to go through him. I don't know that you're changing Cam Newton into a Patriot at this point in his career. Cam Newton's been playing in a lot of NFL football, and he is who he is. And who was the other one that you mentioned, Mike? Winston?
Andy Dalton.
Are you kidding? Dalton?
Well, no. I'm just talking about the two guys out there, Mitch. I'm not promoting this idea.
I know. Right. I don't see any of them as a New England Patriot. I want to ask you about a couple other drafts.
One thing about Cam. Let's stick with Cam for just one more second, Mitch and Bob. Okay, Mitch. I don't think that Cam Newton, who's had, you know, injury problems and everything that has started his decline started with injuries. Okay. But I don't think we're talking about Jameis Winston here. I mean, the year they went to the Super Bowl, he threw 35 touchdown passes. I think he had 10 interceptions. Okay. And Mitch, remember, okay, nobody thought that he was some, you know, I mean, forget his attire. Okay. But forget his post-game attire. Cam Newton going into that Super Bowl was poised to be the next thing in football. He was going to be the LeBron of the National Football League. They were 15-1 that year. Okay. Yeah. And Mitch, he wasn't exactly playing for the life of the party with Ron Rivera.
But
and
Mike,
I do not think it is a crazy notion that, I mean, the next thing you'll tell me if the Patriots think about signing Newton, that, oh my God, you're going to tell me that somebody once thought about putting Dennis Rodman on the Bulls. I mean, come on.
No, I mean, we'll talk about Dennis Rodman, a whole different thing. And I'll respond to that in a second. A word from our friends at Geico. Everybody's got a to-do list. Drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com. And in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. You got extra money in your pocket? It just may be the most rewarding to-do that you do today. Okay, Mike, the Cam Newton that you're talking about was everything that you said he was, but that was when he was about, what, 26 years old, and now he is going to be 31. His last three seasons, his TD to interception ratio is 19-14, 22-16, 24-13. He makes bad decisions. He is not the elusive quarterback anymore that he was when he first came out. He's taken a lot of beatings. He is on the downside of his career at 30, I believe, in terms of what, you know, his strengths when he first came out. Can Bill Belichick, you know, turn him into something? Sure, but you know, better than maybe he was. Better coaches can always do that. But I don't, you know, we've seen a lot of Cam Newton. He's been in the league since 2011. Okay, this isn't.
He's five years younger than Aaron Rodgers. I mean, you're acting like 31 is ancient now in a position where there's a team in Tampa that thinks they're going to go to the Super Bowl next year with a guy who's 78 years old.
So, and has won six Super Bowls.
But Cam Newton hasn't won. He peaked when he went to that Super Bowl. Mitch, Tom Brady could have taken 12 Super Bowls to Tampa. It doesn't change his age. Okay, I'm not talking about his resume. Everybody knows his resume. I'm talking about his age. And when you look at the Patriots, and if they are going to be a win now, I agree with Bob. I don't think it's nuts for the Patriots to consider Cam Newton.
Well, it's not nuts because they don't have a whole lot of alternatives. So, no, it's not nuts. But I just don't see Bill Belichick working that magic on him. But I could be wrong. Let's see what happens. But it's a moot point, Mike, if they don't have money for him. And they don't have money for him. No, they don't have money for anybody. That's why the draft seemed to be such a logical place for them to make that kind of a move.
Do you think
now, they're not
Newton.
They're not the only team in football. I don't want people who are listening to us to say, why does everything have to go through the Patriots? There was a lot of interesting stuff by other teams. Who do you think overall, you know, had the best 3 days on this weird draft?
I think there's a lot of consensus from, you know, the draft guys, because I listen, most of these guys I don't know anything about. So I look at these guys and everybody seemed to think that the Cowboys had a great draft. I looked at one guy who, you know, I read sometimes. With NFL.com, and first round A, second round A, you know, on and on. A is all through the book. Started with CeCe Lamb because they got a great wide receiver. I mean, maybe the best wide. I don't know if he's the best wide. Maybe was he the best wide receiver?
That's going to be interesting, by the way, to have this crop with all these wide receivers as time goes on. There'll be so much debate about, you know, who was the best of this crop. So go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry, but yeah.
No, I'm just saying that I know. Bob, you just touched on something. The hardest thing to know is, because every year there's a great crop of wide receivers. Okay. It's like, it's 6'6" guys in the NBA. Okay. There's just a great crop of wide receivers. And then you find out, do they get with the right quarterback? Blah, blah, blah. Do they get with the right coach? But I'm telling you, CeeDee Lamb is a great pick. And I'll tell you who else I like. You know, they got another good cornerback from Alabama. How many is Alabama allowed to play, like 12 cornerbacks? I mean, Mitch, didn't you get the idea that the Ohio State and Alabama could have fielded like 11 cornerbacks on defense the way this draft went?
You know, I as an aside in the column I wrote the day after the Lions took Jeff Okuda, I said at least one local question was answered. We now understand why Ohio State keeps beating Michigan. The top three picks in the draft all played on the 2017 Ohio State Buckeyes team. For different positions. I mean, that's insane. Yeah. I don't think that's ever happened. 1, 2, and 3 all played on the same team. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, Ohio State and Alabama seeded this thing like crazy. I like what Dallas did, getting CeCe Lamb, Trevon Diggs, Gallimore, some of those other guys. I really like what Baltimore did. And what is always impressive to me is how teams who had great seasons the year before can still have great draft picks. And that's why they perennially, those teams do well. A lot of people felt that Minnesota had a fantastic draft. And Minnesota had a pretty decent year last year.
Yep.
They were certain. Now, it helps that they got like 15 or 16 picks. They just stockpiled them. But they got Jefferson, the wide receiver, the first time out. So that gives them somebody more to throw to. They got Gladney, the cornerback. They got Ezra Cleveland, a bunch of guys. The Ravens, to me, really had a good draft, considering, again, you know, a lot of people had them as a Super Bowl pick until they got derailed early on. But they got Patrick Queen as a linebacker to add to that defense, way down where ever the hell they were picking in 27, 8. And then they come back with J.K. Dobbins. And this is what I was talking about before, feeding into a strength of your team. A lot of teams did this. They drafted in their strength. They are hardly a team that needs more rushing. You know, between Lamar Jackson and their running backs, they rush really well. But they said, well, how are we going to pass up on J.K. Dobbins, who held the single season rushing mark for Ohio State? Not a bad school to have that mark with. And then they got a great defensive tackle and all that. They did fantastically for a team that went far in the playoffs and is going to go far in the playoffs this year. The Cowboys had, you know, they didn't have a great season last year, but they weren't at the bottom of the barrel, and they had a good draft. You know, so I think the haves got more haves this year.
Well, we talked last time we met about what this draft was going to be like and how different in terms of preparation. And are we just simply paying a salute to scouting and just general football acumen? I mean, you know, right? I mean, it comes down to you know, informed opinion. Some are more informed and better crafted than others. I mean, so I'm just throwing it out there. Yeah, to me, it all makes sense. I don't have any problem.
Don't you feel,
I'm not
Mike,
problem
you see,
any.
You almost see like personalities come out in the way that teams draft. And that's like somebody's going to be ballsy enough to draft a really good player at a position where they don't need it. And someone is just going to play very much by the rules. We need a cornerback, or we need a safety. Pick that position. And
like
play
the Giants
safe.
obviously needed an offensive lineman. They took Andrew Thomas with the fourth pick. Everybody knew they were going to take an offensive lineman, and they did to protect Daniel. Yeah, that's exactly what you're talking about, Mitch. Sometimes that was chalk of all chalk in the first round.
Mike, wasn't Exhibit A of what we were just talking about the Giants going for pass rushers a while back? In the past decade, when they were loading up with pass rushers,
wasn't
Exhibit A of going to strength that they couldn't have enough quality pass rushers,
and that's why Mitch is right that the Lions were just screwed where they were sitting, because nobody wants to take a cornerback with the third pick in the draft. I don't care if he turns out to be anybody from Emlyn Tannehill to Charles Woodson, Willie Wood, any great cornerback you can think of, Michael Haynes. They did not want to do that. And Mitch, I wanted to ask you before, and again, listen, we got Mitch from Detroit here, so I can talk about the Lions if I want to. If the Lions had been so bad that they had the number one pick, would they have taken Burrow?
It's a really good question, because they were only a loss away from that, basically.
Right. I was thinking about them the other night, Mitch, and I'm thinking, what would they have done if they ended up with the top pick?
They would have had to have a summit with the godfather, or godmother, I should say, because it's Martha Ford, and say to her, okay, we know that you told us, that would be Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia, that we have to win this year or basically we're fired. Will you be willing to lift that shadow over us and give us another year if we draft a quarterback for the future that we think we can hang our hat on? Tua would have been that guy if he never got hurt. And if they would have been in the same situation, Mike, with the number one pick, with a healthy Tua or Joe Burrow to pick from, then I think here's a really good argument you can make.
Okay.
You don't wait until you need a quarterback, and then that year you're drafting 17th. And you say, well, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? When you get up in the top three, you can make an argument to say, if we don't want to be a team that's going to be here every year in the top three, if there's a franchise quarterback, take that quarterback now and get out of the pattern of having to be in that top three, because no player is going to make a bigger difference for you then. There is a school of thought that makes sense for. If you are one, two, or three, and you can get a generational quarterback, you take him even if you don't need him.
Yeah, I think
because you don't plan on being back. How often do teams get to be number three? You can have, Mike, you can have a 3-13 record and be the and have the fifth pick sometimes. It just depends on the year, you know?
Mitch, I think you just answered your own question, but here's the thing. Mitch and Bob, you don't want to get on that treadmill, okay?
Right.
The Giants have drafted 2nd, 6th, and 4th, okay? And you can't tell me that they're any closer to the playoffs now than they were before the draft. And by the way, before we close the book on the draft, and what a pretty neat experience it was watching, I'd like to remind you that we're sponsored by Harry's. Now is not the time to be overpaying for razors at the drugstore, and Harry's knows sometimes it's better to just stay inside. That's why they ship directly to you, so you can experience the quality of a Harry's shave in just a few days from the convenience of your own home. And let me tell you from my own experience, their razors are amazing. I love the quality of the shave I get with Harry's. It's as simple as that. I also enjoy their aloe infused shave gel. I just want you to know exactly what it is. It doesn't leave my face dry. It smells great. And the blades, again, they don't feel like any old razor I have ever used in the past. One pass and it easily removes my stubble. I don't even have to press down. It's that smooth of a shave and feel. Harry's is a return to the essentials. Quality, durable blades at a fair price, just $2 per blade. Again, go to the drugstore and see what the other things are charging. They've cut out the middleman manufacturing blades in their German blade factory that's been honing precision blades for a century, which means you get incredibly high quality blades at factory direct prices. And right now you can join me and the 10 million people who have tried Harry's with a special trial offer by going to harrys.com/reporters. And with their 100% quality guarantee, there's no risk. Seriously, if you don't love your shave, let them know and you'll get a full refund. Listeners of our show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/reporters. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip. And I mean, who's not looking for one of those? 5 blade razors with a lubricating strip and trimmer braid, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/reporters to start shaving better today. Next guys, year, that was my favorite draft ever. I thought it was great.
It's going to be so boring next year going back to the old hoopla. This was fabulous. This was a godsend for them to have this happen in terms of getting people's attention and giving them something fun to talk about. I think it's never going to happen again, but boy, it's going to be remembered as that fun draft to watch, no question.
You know what I saw it as? It was like when the teams today wear retro uniforms. This was what the draft essentially was when it came into being. It was a bunch of guys in different places on telephones. And now we're on computers. But it's a bunch of guys in different places kind of calling in and saying, we'll take... And it was dressed up with some really homemade-looking camera shots. I mean, whoever set up these cameras in the kids' houses, you could tell, like... There was never a good position to get everybody in on the big sectional. So someone was off to the side, or it was pointed a little high or a little low. And then as soon as someone jumped up with the cell phone, they were out of the frame. I loved seeing all that. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't, you know, it didn't always have a video to go with it and music to go with it. There were none of the outfits. There were none of the ridiculous, you know, for kids who still don't have contracts, wearing these ridiculous suits and entourages and 37 guys with them. You saw them with their families. You generally saw a father, a mother, a sister, a girlfriend. That was about it because of the social distancing. You know, I found myself counting how many people were in some houses and seeing if they were over 10, because that's just me. But I thought it was great. And they weren't over-interviewed. They didn't come out on stage. They didn't have a phony hug with Goodell. I thought Goodell was the most engaging I've ever seen him. You know, he always looks so stiff on big things, on the big stages, and he certainly doesn't seem to enjoy the booing on the big stage as much as he was encouraging it on this thing through computers. It must not hurt as much when it's just coming through a computer because you can turn the volume down. But I swear I would advocate for this every year.
By the way, could Joe Burrow have looked less enthusiastic? No, really? Huh?
Yeah.
I mean, well, I think it was worthy of comment that he couldn't have looked less, you know, bored, more bored. Oh, God. It really has. It's like, oh, my God. I was praying to the last second that they would trade. It's really happened. It's real. And I'm on live television. And I've got to look enthusiastic. He couldn't do it.
Hey, listen, a lot of guys thought that they weren't going to the right spot. I'm sure Peyton wasn't excited about going to the Indianapolis Colts when he got to the Indianapolis Colts and things worked out pretty good.
Oh, yeah, but I'm just saying, Mike, you know, I'm just saying he looked, it was startling.
Well, I mean, but Bob, this is a kid who doesn't go through life with a lampshade on his head, okay? So he played things pretty close to the best going into the championship game after. All right, listen, we had another episode of The Last Dance last night.
Two.
Another great Sunday night of viewing. This thing is really great. And the first one was focused on Rodman. The second one was focused on Phil. But guys, and with all the great Rodman stuff last night, and it was great listening to Michael talk about Rodman. A personal highlight for me, and I think maybe for Mitch too, was hearing Michael call out Isaiah Thomas as an asshole unapologetically.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you knew that he felt that. You knew that
baby.
All the Bulls felt that. I was there at every one of those Pistons Chicago. I didn't miss a single one. That was when I was covering everything. I saw the whole rivalry play itself out year after year after year, and I was certainly there when they walked off the court. And I'll tell you that he would have thought Isaiah was an asshole even if they didn't walk off the court. I mean, it wasn't like there was love lost before that, and it's like, oh, I thought he was my friend. But that move, now the story in Detroit of what actually happened in that game, with for those who aren't don't have the frame of reference. So the Pistons had beaten the Bulls two straight years in the playoffs in Eastern, I guess it was the Eastern Conference Finals. And then in the third year, just as the Pistons had to go through the Celtics so many years to finally get to the finals, in the third year, after losing in seven games the previous year, the Bulls came in and just swept the whole thing. It wasn't even close. They won the first two games in Chicago. They came into Detroit. And Detroit thought, okay, we'll get them now. We're the Pistons. We know what to do to Michael Jordan. And they lost game three, and it was pretty obvious how badly they were losing game four. And the story that actually goes around in Detroit is that Laimbeer and Thomas cooked this thing up. And Isaiah blamed Laimbeer for being the ringleader of it. And I don't know. I've heard it go the other way, too. But the two of them basically said, we're going to walk off the court with 2 minutes to go. And there was talk that one of them wanted to pick up the microphone and say thank you to the fans and then walk off. And Chuck Daly was apoplectic over this and was going, you know, guys, you cannot do this. You can't do this. And, of course, trying to argue with Isaiah and Laimbeer isn't so easy. And he managed to sort of talk them down to just walking off with 10 seconds to go, which they did. And you saw Isaiah ducking down. I mean, that you know, talk about like kind of almost a cowardly move. You know, he kind of tucked his head down as they were walking off the court. I remember seeing that when it happened. The only guys who stayed out there, by the way, and I wish that they would have put this in, were Joe Dumars and John Sally. Not the whole team didn't walk off. Dumars and Sally actually stuck around to give at least perfunctory congratulations to the Bulls. But I thought Jordan had his moment on that when he said, nothing you're going to show me is going to make me think that he wasn't an asshole. And he had, as people have now with Trump, when Trump makes a claim and they say, well, let's just play the tape. He had the tape of him congratulating the Pistons when the Pistons beat them year after year. And he had the tape of, you know, and Isaiah tried to play his tape of look, the Celtics did it, and that's what they, and that's how we did it back then. Nuh-uh. Because the Bulls managed to congratulate the Pistons. You saw even after Game 7 of the year before how Jordan had to sit there and go, they were better than us tonight, the better team won, and that killed them. And he said it. So he's right. Isaiah behaved like an asshole. I'm not saying he is an asshole. I'm saying he behaved like an asshole that night. And the whole team did. And it was a black mark on what had been a good stretch for the Detroit Pistons that they get jumped right over. You know, you hear him say Bird, Magic, Michael. And they never say Bird, Magic, Dumars, or Bird, Magic, Thomas, Michael. You know, it's always as if those 2 years the Pistons won didn't exist. And that's the way the Bulls would like it. Yes. Did I stun you?
That rivalry, it kind of gets lost because it did come after Magic and Larry, and then before, you know, Michael's dominance, and it was gripping, it was real, it was compelling. Okay, but last night, what I saw again was just how much Michael wanted to win, and Michael knew that Dennis Rodman could help him win, okay? And I would think that Michael's idea of the perfect teammate, guy, locker room presence, anything, wasn't Dennis Rodman, especially having been through the Bulls-Pistons thing. But it was revelatory to hear it again, because I knew it at the time, how much he embraced Rodman for all of Rodman's craziness, Bob. For all of his craziness, he embraced his basketball skill set, because just as Scottie Pippen's skill set became perfect for Michael over time, Rodman was just what the doctor ordered at the time he came to the Bulls.
Yeah, no question about it. I thought that wonderful graphic, for people who never saw him or understand how special he was, and was the fact that he had seven games in his career and he had no points and 20 rebounds.
I mean, great stat.
That was fantastic. I want to back up just a little bit on the first, because that's the second incarnation. Go back to the first one of them, the first three championships, and winning in 1991. And I was taken and gratified, frankly, by the emphasis on getting Michael to think about sharing And my theory, this is the Bob Ryan theory, and you know, take it or leave it, about the difference between how Michael and LeBron have each reached the pinnacle of their profession in their own time. And the difference between them is that Michael won finally, and it was a finally, he was a rookie in 1984, finally won in 1991 when he was willing to share. And LeBron finally won when he was willing to assume the responsibility of being the best player on the floor and acting accordingly. And the total opposite. So, and I thought that emphasis, that business about the triangle and about the sharing and the ball, and then we saw right there and real live and in person, if you will, of Jackson saying, you know, Paxson's going to be open. And
that was great.
Willingly
oh
made
my
that
God,
pass,
that was great.
Would Michael have willingly made that pass in 89 or 90? I don't think so.
So well, what I was struck with throughout that thing, I was watching with my nephew and I turned to him and I said the same thing. I said, look at how phenomenal Michael Jordan was as a talent. He was singular. He was, as Doug Collins said, the years that he had him, he was the MVP, the defensive player of the year, the all-star MVP. He was everything. And look how willing he was to be coached. You will not see that today. If you made a documentary about any of the biggest stars today and put in that kind of thing, you would not see the nods and acknowledgement to the coaching that Michael Jordan gave to the people who coached him, including Tex Winter and including Doug Collins, you know, who never got him to the promised land. But he gave him a lot of credit for what he did and how he got along with them. And then when they switched coaches on him, and put Phil Jackson in, he said, well, I didn't like Phil at first, but he, you know, he came to listen to him, whatever. I'm struck by how someone of Michael Jordan's talent was so ready to be coached and accept coaching. That is gone today. You know, look at the laundry list of coaches that LeBron James has had. He coaches the team. And all the superstars now feel like they, you know, they're the man, they're the coach. Coaches are extraneous by comparison to that era. And you won't do one of these documentaries on anybody today and have a whole chapter on the coach because it's just not going to matter. They just don't count as much.
Hey, Bobby, did you go to the 91 final?
No.
I was under the basket at Chicago Stadium that night when Michael did that switch hands, hang in the air for 22 minutes. It was Bob and Mitch. It was right in front of me. And watching it again, all I can tell you is it was way better live. It was way better live because I sat next to her. I said, how long was he up in the air? Can we go back and look at how long he was actually up in the air just before he switched hands? And that was also interesting. There's another changing of the guard moment because, you know, not only did they knock off the Pistons on the way, now he knocks off Magic. And by the way, Mitch and Bob, that was still a pretty damn good Lakers team that they beat in five games.
No, that was good. That was very. They were the favorites, I think. You saw that the Lakers were probably favored.
Look how Magic handled the loss versus Isaiah.
Yeah,
I mean that was the finals. And look at what Magic said. If I have to lose to anybody, I want to lose to Michael. It's right. It's his time.
You Mitch, know? Were Chuck Daly, you know, aficionados, right. And I'm sure I'm not saying Mike isn't either, but I know you had him, and I knew Chuck.
I even played golf with him, Bob.
Oh, it's great, and I knew him way back when at BC. That's how we became friendly. And anyway, Mitch, you both remember the famous Chuck. He had many great lines, but one of his lines was, "You have to hope that they allow you to coach them." And, you know, this is what you're talking about. You know, I think I'll have to give one nod to one modern. I think Duncan was willing to be coached by a Pop. And I think that was for sure. But that's probably the only one.
Well, if you're calling Duncan a modern, I mean, you know, I'm he's been out of basketball for a little while. I'm talking about the guys who are superstars.
Right, because he's going into the Hall of Fame, right?
Yeah, no. But I'm
not saying it's 5 years. You're right.
Yeah, but if you're doing the LeBron James 10 episode documentary, you're not spending a whole episode on a coach.
No.
You know.
By the way, Mike, you were there for that one, and I was there for the famous Dr. J swoop. Remember that one? That was in my face. I was sitting on the baseline. He coming right at me. That was in my face, the famous Dr. J swoop. So
By the way, guys, and so since we're talking about coaches and coaching and everything, I know that Jerry Krause became the villain of the piece last Sunday night, okay? But that was a pretty ballsy hire. of Phil Jackson at the time. And I know he'd been sitting on their bench, but his big moment had been with the Albany Patroons. And Phil the Thrill was perfect for this, for these guys. I mean, and, you know, we all laughed about the Zen Master stuff. And unfortunately, too many people now are going to remember the horrible job he did when he became president of the Knicks. Yeah. But he was the perfect guy for them, except we didn't know it at the time.
Well, Jerry brought him in, you know, to from Albany to that assistant job. I mean, he's responsible for Phil Jackson's presence as a coach in the NBA. I don't know, you know, what might have happened somewhere else. It might have happened some other time.
But you're right. I have a question for you, Bob. I have a question for you because I don't remember it. Before I ask you the question, a final word from our good friends at Geico.
Okay, this is a 30-second commercial, and I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you, but please stay with me. In just 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. This company has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years. And anytime you need help, you can speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. The company is Geico. Go to geico.com today. Sorry for all the numbers. And in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, I'm out of time.
Here's my question. What did Doug Collins do wrong to get moved out and have Phil Jackson moved in at the time?
It's been murky. It's murky. I don't know. I just don't, maybe they thought that he just couldn't get him the next step.
Couldn't get him in the promised land.
And Mitch and Bob, I think Jerry believed what Phil believed, that they had, that Michael had to change. Okay, and I think that he might have thought that Michael and Doug were too close for Doug to ever convince him to do the things that Phil talked about last night and illustrated last night in that one huddle about Paxson. Okay. I think that's a fair analysis of what went on at the time.
Well, if that's the case, you have to tip your hat to Krause, because that's a ballsy move when you're on the rise. Oh. And just as it was to get rid of Oakley and some of those other guys. I mean, I know he's taken it on the chin, and he's an easy target, the way he comes across and the things that he says and the way that he looks in some of those clips. But he made some pretty ballsy moves there. I got to know Doug, obviously, when he became coach of the Pistons for several years. And so, you know, we talked about that, and I never really got an answer, you know, but I know it gnawed at him, because I know he took Michael to the highest level. It was like Moses dying on the mountain and not getting to go into the promised land, but getting to see it. He could see what Michael was going to become, and then he had to step aside just when Phil Jackson stepped in, and Phil gets the 6 championships. Would they have won 1, 2, if Doug Collins had stayed there, would the just the natural ascension of Michael Jordan have gotten them
know.
There?
There was that whole Doug Collins Tex Winter problem too, yeah. And you know that was a talk about dysfunctional family kid thing that they're shoving, you know, making those two coexist, and they couldn't. And so I don't know. That's interesting.
Did Doug end up coaching Michael in Washington? He did, didn't he?
Yes, he did, and it was embarrassing. He was deferential. That's when in my opinion, he was embarrassing himself by Michael was running the show. He was absolutely, you know, no.
Mitch and Bob, I got Doug's coaching record. He coached 4 different teams in the NBA. You very rarely get 4 jobs in any sport, basketball, football, baseball, whatever you said. His lifetime record was 442 and 407. And he just was never quite at the right place at the right time. Mitch, his best year was with the Pistons. He was better with the Pistons than he was with 54 and 28 in 96-97.
But he wears people out.
He was a good coach.
Right? He wears people out. He's one of those guys.
Yeah, he wears people out.
The energy level is. Yeah.
The energy level, he exasperates people over time, or did when he was a coach.
I'll tell you what, Costas told me, he's worked with a lot of great color men in more than one sport. He thought Doug Collins was great as an analyst. He loved sitting next to Doug Collins.
He was a great guy, too. He was lovely to be around, and he was considerate and all that. He was intense. When they said he sweated through his suit while he coached, that's accurate. I think, you know, basketball just turned the temperature up so high, and the intensity thing was an issue even in Detroit. So yeah, that was an. But isn't it interesting? And I think the whole reason that this thing works, this documentary, is that they're treating them and analyzing them kind of like a rock band, and there's, you know, there's the Mick Jagger in Jordan, but there's definitely the Keith Richards characters and the Bill Wyman characters and the managers, you know, or Beatles documentary.
Okay, wait, who's Horace thing. Grant? Is he Charlie? Because you know what? Maybe he's going to get some love down the road. Horace Grant was a perfect forward on that team. Perfect, yeah. Perfect.
Good draft pick by Krause. You know, we'll never get the credit that he deserves because he screwed himself up and I always go back to what we heard Steve Kerr say last week. You know, he couldn't get out of his own way, and he had to be inserting himself in such social situations where he didn't belong. That was probably the one way to sum up what his problem
Mitch,
was. It certainly wasn't his brain power. No, it wasn't that at all. And his acumen for basketball.
All right, before we go today, this has nothing. Since Mitch put the Rolling Stones on the table, Mitch, do you have a possible explanation as a musician? How come Charlie Watt didn't have a drum set the night of their concert, the stay-at-home concert? Was that one of the bizarre things you've ever seen? Mitch, wouldn't he have a drum? Mitch, I'm just asking you, okay? Like, well, Mitch, you have a piano at the house? Do you not?
I got four of them in this.
Okay,
house.
Thank you.
I don't
you.
Make my living at it anymore. Yeah,
Mitch.
I guess
where was the drum
set? Zen about that?
Mitch, where was the drum set?
I don't know. It's a little like Keith Richards saying, I'd love to participate, but I don't have a guitar. You know? But, you know, I mean, basketball players are, you know, they're saying, well, they can't practice because they don't have a hoop at home or they don't want, you know, they have one in the driveway. I mean, I guess some people just figure it's their job and they'll do it when they go to work. We'll see. What's going to be interesting in this thing, by the way, and all young people who are listening to us next weekend, I'm sure that if they do two more, one of those will deal with it. Is that Michael Jordan disappeared for 2 years to go play baseball.
Oh, baby.
LeBron James didn't do that. Kawhi Leonard didn't do that. None of your guys that you have here today who are ascending to that throne disappeared for 2 years and then came back and won three more. And that episode, I'm sure, will be dealt with
baby.
Next Sunday. And that still remains. I'm looking forward to that because that always remained to me like the biggest mystery of what was going on. It was hard to get data. It was hard to get information about what was happening in the minor leagues when he was down there. So that should be interesting, and we'll look forward to that. So that's where we are here now, folks, by the way. The next scheduled sporting event that will actually take place on time will be June 25th, the NBA draft, which won't be anywhere near as exciting as this one. So that's what we're looking at now in terms of events that have not yet been canceled from the calendar. The only one that's still standing is the 25th
Mitch,
of June.
You better start boning up on your golf history and knowledge. Because
yeah, they're going to start playing that.
Mitch, that's your assignment over the next. That's your assignment.
Well, we'll talk about that on Thursday for sure. Until we see you on Thursday, I want to thank you for joining us today. We do the Sports Reporters Podcast every Monday and Thursday. If you have friends who always enjoyed the TV show and say, boy, I wish that was still on. Well, we are in a certain sense in podcast land, and it's free, and you can listen to it whenever you like on any popular platform like Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, Apple, any of those. If you like what you heard, leave us a comment. If you didn't, leave us a comment. And please, if you can, leave us a rating. We will be back on Thursday. And until then, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying stay safe, and we'll see you on Thursday.